Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, NBs of all ages, welcome to the Art of Overanalysis. I'm your host, Marcus. I'm doing this. I talked about doing something like this briefly on Twitter a while ago. Some of you might remember the Art of Overanalysis was a series of long-form writing pieces that I put out first on my own site, thenarrationbox.com. Shout out to you if you remember when that was a thing. And then last, or 2017 now, so a year and a half ago, when we launched Player Advantage, I put it on there. So now, after all of that, we're doing it this way. And the funny thing is, when I first conceptualized The Art of Overanalysis, 3 years ago, the spring of 2016, The idea was for it to be a YouTube series that was actually focused on characters. And due to me not having a computer that could really do what I wanted it to, and me not being good enough at editing videos for it to be what it was, the first version of this, the first edition of The Art of Overanalysis was actually piece about Knives Chow. That was supposed to be the first episode. I still have that audio file somewhere. What went up, that long form piece, which is now maybe lost to the sands of time, who knows, that was supposed to be, that was essentially the script for that. It just didn't pan out that way. And I went in a different direction with it. What I'm doing now, this is just kind of me getting out a lot of the thoughts I have about a lot of different things, because I'm, constantly consuming different media, and I have a lot of thoughts about it, and it's easier to speak them than it is to really write them down in a way that I'm satisfied with. So after a lot of thought, I think this is the direction I want this to go in. This isn't going to replace, this podcast right here, which is weird to say on the name of another podcast. Me and Ian are still going to do that whenever our schedules permit, but this is just me doing this, when I've got time, when, it makes sense to do it, when there's just something, on my mind. So this first episode, is going to be about Kofi Kingston, the whole Kofi Mania thing, him having a match this Sunday at WrestleMania, and what that means to me. Because Kofi Kingston, when he first debuted, I was 13 years old. In the eighth grade, and I was staying up late, late on Mondays to watch Raw. Because it aired at 9, and I would stay up even later on Tuesdays, because around this time my mom stopped really policing me on when I went to bed. She was a lot more, adamant that my brothers go to bed at a decent time, but me, she was less worried about. So I would end up staying up all night, watching wrestling, so I would stay up till 10, till ECW came on, and I would watch that, watch it. It was only an hour, so it was fine. And I remember watching the first vignettes airing for Kofi Kingston. And right away, because when you're 13, especially, pre-Twitter, pre-social media, really, the only thing that was really around was MySpace. And that wasn't nearly what Twitter is today in terms of just the way that wrestling fans kind of interacted with each other and the way that kind of the world was walked through. Because, like, Dirt Sheets still existed. I was, around this time, I became a frequenter of SE Scoops, thanks to my best friend Michael, who introduced me to the concept of, these sites, they tell you all the news about wrestling before stuff happens. You gotta look, bro. It's all, everything's on there, all the cool stuff. So naturally I looked. But, you know, outside of YouTube comments, outside of MySpace, a lot of times people weren't really, it was different then, is what I'm getting at. And I remember just being amped up for everybody who appeared, who was getting hyped up, who was clearly going to be a babyface. And my knowledge of what was a babyface and what was a heel was very, let's say, limited at the time. I had read Shawn Michaels' book a million times. I had read Pro Wrestling for Dummies or something, or The Idiot's Guide to Pro Wrestling. So I knew what these terms meant, and I knew what the character was. But, you know, I'm 13 years old. I'm still, you know, rooting for the good guys. And if you know me now, that hasn't really changed. So I'm very clear, like, right away into Kofi Kingston, into his presentation. Like, cool, this Jamaican dude. And, you know, recently I talked about this with my dad. And part of the reason I gravitated to Kofi Kingston was the obvious reason of, you know, besides him being a babyface, it was, he looked like me. Or instead of saying just that, it was a combination of him and being looking like me and him being a babyface and being presented the way he was. Because, you know, at the time there weren't a lot of, weren't a lot of black people on the roster, and there double weren't a lot of black guys on the roster who were faces. And on top of that, there weren't a lot of black guys on the roster who were faces who were doing the kind of things that Kofi Kingston would later, like once he properly debuted, would prove to be doing. You know, there was Shelton Benjamin, who I don't think was ever a face. I don't think Shelton Benjamin has ever been a babyface, except for maybe when they were doing stuff with him and his mom, quote unquote. But even then, I think he was still supposed to be presented as like this mama's boy who couldn't do anything if his mama didn't say he could, right? You know, there was Bobby Lashley, who was a babyface, but Lashley, A, didn't talk very much around then, and still doesn't now, so not much has changed. But he didn't talk much, and he was just this big bruiser, you know. And you gotta understand, when I was 13, I was 4'11", maybe 100 pounds, soaking wet. So I, as a small guy, who kind of knew that he would always be small, because my dad is short, I always gravitated to, you know, the high flyers. Rey Mysterio, Jeff Hardy, Shawn Michaels were kind of my three guys when I was growing up. And so when Kofi comes around and he's doing all the super acrobatic stuff, and he's doing it all with this big smile on his face, you know, now that would be seen as, oh, he's just this cheesy baby face being shoved in our throats. But me, when I was 13, I couldn't get enough of Kofi Kingston. So when he got drafted to Raw, I was over the moon. And I was double happy when he won the Intercontinental title. He beat Chris Jericho later that year for the Intercontinental title, and then eventually lost it to somebody, I don't remember. But then he won the tag titles with CM Punk, too. And around the time, I was like, okay, cool. This is my guy, and he's really, like, he's going somewhere. He's great. And I'm, you know, knowing that storylines are storylines, and that, you know, the company decides, okay, this is what's going to happen. You know, so knowing all that, I look at this and I go, okay, so clearly Kofi is, you know, he's going to go somewhere. They believe in him. They like him. They think he's good. And I thought he was good. So great. So when he was in the Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania 25, I was like, you know, come on, Kofi, come on, Kofi, come on, Kofi. And Punk won it, which was cool because I loved CM Punk at the time. CM Punk was another one of my guys. But, you know, I'm just like, Kofi's gonna soon. You know, it's coming. And then, Survivor Series happened that year. Actually, Bragging Rights happened. Bragging Rights happened first. And that was the start. Because at Bragging Rights, if I remember correctly, it's Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, which is kind of the format they're doing for Survivor Series now. And Big Show and Kofi were on Raw's team. And I want to say so were Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase, who were Legacy at the time. They were Randy Orton's goons, as it were. And Big Show turned on Team Raw, sucker punched Kofi and knocked him out, and gave Team SmackDown the win. And I think Rhodes and DiBiase, or maybe it might have just been Rhodes, got, you know, pissed at Kofi, because Kofi was the one who got pinned. So later, when Orton was in, I think he was defending the WWE title, it's hard to keep track around this time, late 2009, because Cena and Orton fought over the belt a million times. Like, they never... It was constant. It was this constant back and forth of, like, who's got the belt? Cena this week. Then it was Orton. Cena, then Orton. So I think Orton was defending the belt against John Cena. And Rhodes was doing a run-in to try and help Randy. Kofi interfered, stopped him. Cena ended up winning. This I know for sure. Cena won the belt coming out of Bragging Rights in October, because this is pre Hell in a Cell. They weren't doing Hell in a Cell as an annual pay per view yet, thank God. And this was the start, because the next night on Raw, Randy and Kofi get into it, and Randy is so mad, so pissed off about what happened, that DiBiase and Rhodes gift him a stock car. They gift him a stock car with his face on it. Like, it's with his render that they use on everything around this time is on this car. And it's got, like, all his weird Orton Vine imagery and, all that stuff on it. And it says Legend Killer. And it's just, like, this ode to Randy Orton in vehicle form. And Kofi ends up smashing the hood of the car with, like, a crowbar, and then dumps paint all over it. And this goes on for a while with him and Orton feuding back and forth. They had different they had their teams in Survivor Series. They had their Survivor Series teams. Kofi won. It wasn't just Kofi's team. Kofi won by pinning Orton, and he was the last man standing for his team, and which is a big deal, because at this time Kofi's only been on the roster for like a year, and I'm like jumping for joy. I could not be happier, because at this point in time, Shawn Michaels was in the the twilight of his career. Jeff Hardy was gone. Jeff Hardy, this would have been 2009. Jeff Hardy would have just left WWE and would have actually just been arrested and indicted on those... I think he was indicted yet. He didn't get indicted until January. But he had just been arrested and charged with those drug charges. Kofi is my guy at the time. I don't have... I like Kofi. I like Punk. Matt Hardy was still around, but as far as WWE was going, because I was still watching TNA, like, religiously, I was recording TNA every week, but as far as WWE was going, like, it was, like, Kofi, CM Punk, and Rey Mysterio, were my guys, really, around this time, because Shawn had slowed down a lot. He was disappearing for months at a time, and then he'd come back, and I'd cry a little bit. But it was the Kofi show, as far as I was concerned. And then came the moment, the apex, the peak of his career at this point. Randy Orton is in the ring. He's attacking Rowdy Roddy Piper. I don't remember why, but he's attacking Piper. And it was in Madison Square Garden. It was the last show they, the last episode of Raw they did there. They had the short aisleway still, so they had the great visual of, you know, everybody coming out through that big door. Kofi comes out. He and Orton brawl all over the place, and the crowd is red hot. The crowd that night is so into him. I actually went back and I rewatched that clip about a week ago. And Kofi ends up hitting the boom drop through a table in the crowd, and it's awesome. I replayed that clip a million times. When I would have been 14 or 15 at this point. And I'm just so happy, you know, like, oh my God, Kofi's, he's put Randy Orton through a table. They're gonna, you know, make Kofi champion soon. And then came the moment that everybody knows, when Kofi Kingston, it was a triple threat match, Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton, John Cena, and Kofi was supposed to stay down for the punt. He's supposed to take Orton's punt, which in hindsight, I think the plan would have been for him to take the punt and then to disappear for a little while, to be off TV, maybe a month, because this is early January, around Rumble time, and then probably come back around Elimination Chamber, end up in the Money in the Bank ladder match, and win the Money in the Bank ladder match. That's that last part, for sure, I know was, definitely something they had talked about around the time. That's always at least been the scuttlebutt, as it were, is that Kofi Kingston was, around this time, penned in as the guy who, you know, to win Money in the Bank. And when you consider that Jack Swagger won it that year, and they had three Money in the Bank matches, it would actually make a lot of sense for Kofi to have won the one at Mania. Especially given how well he performed in the match the year before. Because that was the year where he climbed up a ladder that Mark Henry was holding. Like, it wasn't set up like a normal ladder. Mark Henry is holding it, and it's totally vertical. So Kofi jumps, and he scales this thing, and he's like a fingertip away before Mark Henry realizes what's going on and drops him with the World's Strongest Slam. Kofi, instead of staying down for the punt, gets up. And it might have just been a lapse in judgment. He might have just forgotten to take the punt, or thought that Orton was going to give him the RKO and then punt him. What happens is Orton freaks his shit, as Randy Orton is known to do, gives him an RKO, and just starts screaming at him, just like, stupid, 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 like, just like being the worst, which Randy Orton was kind of known for doing at this point. Just ask Ken Anderson. And that was kind of the end of it as far as Kofi as a main event guy went. Orton has always had a ton of pull in that locker room, and especially at this point in time when he was their top heel. So 2010, Edge wins the Royal Rumble. Jack Swagger wins Money in the Bank. This leads to Jack Swagger, not Kofi Kingston, cashing in Money in the Bank 2 days later on an episode of SmackDown, pinning Chris Jericho, winning the World Heavyweight Championship in a reign that is so largely forgettable that a year later, or 2 years later, in 2012, Dolph Ziggler, it was Michael Cole in 2011, mentioned nobody even remembers that Jack Swagger was World Heavyweight Champion. And that was kind of the end of it for Kofi as a top guy for a long time. He floated around, kind of became the king of the mid-card, won the Intercontinental title another two times, because he had already won it twice by this point. Won the U.S. title 3 times. And became the longest reigning tag team champion in history. After the New Day was formed. And even after the New Day, when he finally had some life back in him. You know, when people were starting to really come around on Kofi. Because a big part of why... A big part of why Kofi getting this spot now is so important is the fact that for a long time, a lot of people saw Kofi as only at a certain level. Like, around 2011, 2012, and through, I'd say, 2013, Kofi was seen as the guy who's going to be the Intercontinental Champion. You know, he was seen as that Ricky Steamboat level kind of guy, except this isn't the 80s, you know? Being the Intercontinental Champion 4 times in 1989 would be a huge deal. It's not so much that in 2019. And Kofi, especially around that time, was just seen as, this guy's never going to get past this level. By the company, for sure, and by a lot of fans. And, you know, people will say otherwise, but I remember. I remember when he beat Cesaro for the U.S. title in 2013. And it was seen as like an insult to Cesaro that they were mistreating Cesaro by having him lose to Kofi, a guy who had been on the roster for 5 years, who had won the Intercontinental title 4 times and the U.S. title once. You know, Kofi was seen as beneath it. Beneath Cesaro and the way they were, that he was pushed at the time, which he wasn't. The thing Cesaro was most notable for doing at this point was yodeling and cucking Teddy Long by stealing Oksana away from him. That's it. That's all Cesaro was really doing at this point. And it was seen as beneath him. Meanwhile, Dolph Ziggler, who Kofi had feuded with a million times, there was this huge, you know, outcry that Dolph Ziggler deserved better. Even when he won Money in the Bank, even though he had already been world champion once, which I think people forget, that he was awarded the... He was just awarded the World Heavyweight title on an episode of SmackDown in 2011, before he lost it back to Edge that night. And this is after he had challenged earlier that year for the World Heavyweight title. You know, Dolph, they clearly, around this time at least, 2011, 2012, they always had plans for. Meanwhile, Kofi was languishing after he and Evan Bourne had been, you know, they dropped the tag titles at a house show to Primo and Epico Colon because Evan Bourne got popped on a wellness violation. Kofi, you look at the card in 2011, you know, look at the Rumble through Mania in 2011, and in 2012, 2011, 2012, 2013, look at the cards. Dolph was always featured prominently. I remember he had a great match with Daniel Bryan at Bragging Rights in 2010. He had a great match with Caval, better known as Low Key, at Survivor Series that year. He had that match with Edge at the Rumble for the world title, while Kofi was just a guy in the Rumble. I don't even think he did one of his, or he might have. 2011 might have been the start of him doing the big spots in the Rumble. I think that was 2012, yeah. You look at the WrestleMania card in 2013, and Dolph was in a tag title match, Dolph with Kofi's future tag partner, Big E Langston, teaming up, to face Team Hell No for the tag team championships. And Kofi was a guy in a 6-minute 8-man tag against the Core. And if you can name all 4 members of the Core without looking, I will applaud you. Because it takes me a second. Kofi was just another guy on the roster and was treated like that at this time. Whereas Dolph was... Actually, you know what? I have my timeline wrong. 2013, Kofi was not on the card. I'm thinking of 2011. Kofi was a guy in that 8-man match. The WrestleMania 29 card, Kofi wasn't even on the card. You know, he would win the U.S. title a couple weeks later, but yeah, he wasn't even on the show. Dolph would win the World Heavyweight title, you know, the night after WrestleMania. Kofi would continue to do nothing. And that broke my heart. And it broke my heart because he was my guy, but it broke my heart because, you know, you become a big fan of something, of somebody, and to see them get treated like a joke, not just by the powers that be or what have you, but by the other people watching this, especially somebody, again, Kofi Kingston was a guy who, especially at this time, because I had long dreadlocks by this point, which wasn't an intentional thing. It wasn't a Kofi Kingston cosplay moment. It was just I wanted to grow my hair out. But, you know, Kofi Kingston was a guy who looked like me. Kofi Kingston was a guy who I had been a fan of at this point for 5 years. And it bummed me out. Broke my heart. So in the New Day forms, you know, Kofi wins the tag. They win the tag titles. And they're now 5-time tag team champions. Kofi Kingston is the longest reigning tag team champion of all time. And by Vince McMahon's own admission, surefire Hall of Famer. And I know the Hall of Fame doesn't mean anything, but, you know, it's cool. Kofi Kingston has never had, in all that time, despite being the most decorated, you know, one of, if not the most decorated man on the roster, Kofi Kingston has never had a one-on-one shot at the WWE Championship. Kofi Kingston has never had a singles match at WrestleMania. Ever. This year will be his 9th WrestleMania because of the 2 years he sat out. This will be his 9th WrestleMania. This will be his first time in a singles match at WrestleMania ever. This will be his first time challenging for a singles title at WrestleMania. This will be his first one-on-one shot at the WWE Championship ever. He's been on the roster for 11 years. His first push into the main event was a decade ago. He has never, not a single time, had a shot at the WWE Championship. And just for the sake of transparency, you look at the list of guys in that time who have had shots at the WWE title or the World Heavyweight title or the Universal title one-on-one. So you've got, you know, John Cena, Randy Orton, Edge, Chris Jericho, Triple H, The Undertaker, Rey Mysterio, The Miz, Wade Barrett, Sheamus, Zack Ryder. Yes, Zack Ryder did have a one-on-one shot at the WWE Championship in 2010. He faced Sheamus. He was Sheamus' hand-picked opponent. And Sheamus bro-kicked him and pinned him in under 10 seconds. But he still got a one-on-one shot at the WWE title. Kane, The Big Show, Mark Henry, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Ryback, Dean Ambrose, Brock Lesnar, Batista, Goldberg, Sting, Neville. You know, the list of other guys who got shots: Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, Jack Swagger. This list is kind of never ending. You know, it's almost like it was anybody but Kofi, you know? And this is all, you know, the result of circumstance. Kofi is in this spot because Mustafa Ali got hurt. And I know that. And, you know, everyone knows that. But he's making the best of it. And for the first time in 10 years, Kofi Kingston, the same Kofi Kingston that I watched as a wide-eyed 13-year-old, I now, as an extremely tired 24-year-old, I get to watch have his first ever one-on-one match at WrestleMania. I get to watch have his first shot at the WWE title one-on-one. You know, not in a Royal Rumble match, not in an Elimination Chamber, but a one-on-one match against Daniel Bryan, another one of my favorites of all time. And it's going to be great. And I hope he wins. Because you look at all the other guys who got shots, all the other guys who people wanted to see get a chance, and Kofi was always one of the guys whose name was left off that list. Until now. And I know that I've always said that the concept of deserving anything in wrestling, that wrestling is a meritocracy, is ridiculous. Because it is. Wrestling isn't sports. It's not, you know, dictated by who's good. It's dictated by who fits the story. It's dictated by what makes the most money. And it always has been. But I never stopped believing that Kofi Kingston was a guy that could be the right guy for the spot. I never stopped believing that he would one day get the spot. I'll never forget January of 2014. He pinned Randy Orton, the WWE champion at the time, straight up with the SOS, and nothing ever came of it. And that always stuck in my craw. And here we are, 5 years later. And the guy who everyone was rooting for then to get a shot at the WWE title, Daniel Bryan, is now our heel champion. And everyone hopes that Kofi Kingston beats him. And that's awesome. That's about it for this time around. I'll be back next week. Maybe 2 weeks from now. Not sure yet. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Archer Arios, spelled ArchErAriOS. Follow me there. Follow this podcast right here, which is not the name of this show. God, that is the weirdest name to say on the on anything that is not that show. But follow that show at this pod here on Twitter. And until next time, stay safe. Hope to hear you all or see you all next week.